All right, guys, let's get started. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Hopefully the keynote was good for everyone and get an idea of what's coming with all these new exciting technologies, Silverlight being one of them. So today we're going to talk about a Silverlight and some of the things that you should know when you begin to build applications, maybe like you traditionally have for ASP.NET or Windows Forms or even WPF. So my name is Jason Barris. I'm Director of Product Management at Infragistics. There's my blog. My email is jasonb@infragistics.com in case you guys have any questions later or want to learn more about what we're talking about here. So I'm a Director of Product Management at Infragistics. We have a bunch of .NET products, Silverlight, WPF, Windows Forms, ASP.NET that specifically cover the UI and the whole user experience around building user interfaces. We have Java, we have icons, we have testing tools. Been an MVP for 7 years, written a bunch of books. My latest book we're shipping in July by Rocks Press is on Silverlight 3. So we did a book on Silverlight 1, and then we did a book on Silverlight 2, and that lifespan was so short, we kind of just skipped publishing that, and now it goes off to Silverlight 3 because that's right around the corner. I'm an Aneta speaker, so I do a lot of user groups and events like this, and in the U.S., I founded several user groups, so user groups are something we believe in and I believe in community, and it's kind of cool that everyone's here today. It's a huge, huge event. So Infragistics, I mentioned this. We do UI controls. We have offices over the world. But the idea for today is Silverlight. So we're going to talk about Silverlight, talk about why you would want to use Silverlight, the versions of Silverlight, because I think that's increasingly important right now, and it could get confusing if you're not actually in the technology and you're just reading about it. You'll start to wonder what's going on with all these Silverlight versions. Then looking at features for business apps, and then a bunch of demos around some foundational elements of Silverlight, and then some things that hopefully you can take with you when you start to build out apps yourself. So before I start, how many folks are actually using Silverlight today? Wow. How many of those are using production applications? So there's a handful. So there's a lot of people who aren't using Silverlight. And I think that's very representative of what I see everywhere. In the U.S., it's the same thing. It's a slower adoption curve. The tooling isn't quite there yet, and you'll see that today, where Visual Studio 2008 doesn't exactly deliver what you might consider a great development experience for Silverlight. Similar to what you might expect in ASP.NET or Windows Forms. If you remember, WPF took a long ways to get to where we're at today for building out applications, and there's still a ways to go. How many guys are doing WPF? So less are actually doing WPF than Silverlight, and that's interesting. And probably it has a lot to do with what Silverlight can deliver. So what Silverlight is, essentially, is a plugin for the browser. So what we have is Flash has been out there for a while. Flex has been out there for a while. Microsoft hasn't had a story around a real RIA, rich internet application platform for the browser, and Silverlight brings that. So you can take what you know in .NET, plug it into some nice animations and beautiful styles and good-looking user interface, and bring something that's delivered through the internet over the browser like you would an ASP.NET application. So initially with Silverlight 1, we had media, and then we start getting a little more serious about the types of apps we can build because we have the .NET framework behind Silverlight 2, and then moving forward, Silverlight 3 even adds more features. So the idea with Silverlight is you want to have the reach of an ASP.NET app, you want to have the ease of deployment of an ASP.NET app, but you want to have the programming model that you're used to using in a rich client app without worrying about view state and postbacks and all that stuff. So Silverlight kind of removes that, gives you a really good platform for building an application in the browser, similar to an easier sort of code-behind experience without all the goo that you need to worry about with ASP.NET. One of the things about Silverlight is, why is this so important now? And the answer might seem obvious, but it's important to state that user expectation gets very high. So you look at consumer websites that have been written in Flash or very rich DHTML, and the user experience and the interactions are pretty amazing. The response time is pretty amazing. So when you're at home using a consumer application, or your wife is or your kids are, and then you go to work, it's a completely different type of app. You have this battleship gray, sort of Spartan-looking no animations, no color application that you use on the business side. And then on the consumer side, it's beautiful, it's fun, you can't wait to use it, you're excited to use it, you tell your friends about it. So we have to get there with business applications as well, and there really hasn't been a good platform to do that with the nice reach that the web has. So Silverlight brings that to the table. And you can see that the browser as a platform, if you look at Internet Explorer, Firefox, Chrome, Safari, look at those as a platform themselves and what they can offer from a programming model, it gets very complex. So if you're really a hardcore ASP.NET AJAX programmer, you're thinking to yourself, oh, I can do anything and AJAX, I don't need Silverlight, all this stuff I've been able to do for years. But the amount of code you have to write is enormous, and the frameworks aren't there out of the box from Microsoft. So the .NET framework is very rich, but if you want to do something in the browser client side, you're doing a lot of maybe open source frameworks or custom JavaScript. So we've outgrown the usefulness of the browser and what it can deliver. Silverlight, a plugin, back to where we are in the 90s with ActiveX plugins. We have a plugin now, but it delivers this nice platform with security and safety and all the things that we didn't feel back then. So we've come a long way in the last decade or so to start delivering these sort of experiences through the browser. So there's two types of applications you can build, and this is one of the things that's most confusing when we talk about Silverlight up front is, okay, I see samples of Silverlight, but where is the Silverlight? What is the Silverlight piece? Well, if you think that Silverlight is a browser plugin, it's basically just like any other div or table or any element on the page. You can have as many of those elements as you'd like. So I can have three Silverlight plugins on a page, each of them running something different, and I can even communicate between those plugins on the page. So if I have an ASP.NET page, what it's called is an island of richness in that page. So I might have a video playing or a chart, animated graphic playing, or something interactive in a Silverlight plugin. The rest of the page would be ASP.NET, and that's this scenario on the right-hand side, which is islands of richness. Second scenario is just a full-page Silverlight app. I'm not going to use any HTML to actually do the functionality of my application. The browser player is going to be 100% of the height and width of my browser. I'm going to do a bunch of controls, and all the interaction is done with Silverlight, and that's another option for building Silverlight apps. So as you start to integrate Silverlight into your applications, you may choose to put a little bit at a time, sprinkle in some Silverlight through an islands of richness. A good way to do that is like just media. Silverlight has amazing media capability, so to play videos or MP3 files. There's interactive charts out there. There's all kinds of things where you can just sprinkle things in. And then as you become more familiar with Silverlight and you're actually going to build your next big application all through Silverlight, you can do a full-page app, forget about HTML forever. And once you do that, you'll realize that you're never going to do HTML again because the platform is so powerful and there's so much you can do with it because you have the full power of the .NET framework that there's no reason to mess around with JavaScript. You know, and I love Visual Studio and what they're doing with JavaScript, and now we have IntelliSense, we have easy JavaScript debugging, but it's still JavaScript, and it's still a whole nother application to worry about when you're building a web app. You have this client-side piece and the server-side piece, and it just adds complexity. Besides the fact that you have browser issues as well, even though we're getting over that, it's not as bad as it used to be in the past where certain JavaScript would run in IE but not in Firefox. You don't see that as much anymore, but it's still something that's out there that becomes sort of annoying. So understanding that, what Silverlight can do for you, what's going on with all these versions? So there's three versions of Silverlight today. And the way Silverlight works is the plugin gets installed on the computer. You know, the person actually initiates the download. They download it, they install it. And then when Microsoft does an upgrade to Silverlight, the player auto-updates. So one day, the player, when Silverlight 2 gets released, the 1.0 player gets updated to Silverlight 2. When Silverlight 3 will get released, if someone's running a Silverlight 2 app and they're on the public internet, the player will automatically update to Silverlight 3. So the auto-update experience is similar to that of Flash. So if you go to a Flash website, a dialog pops up. It says, you know, Flash Player 10 is available. Do you want to, you know, install Flash Player 10? You say yes. It automatically does it. So Microsoft is making an effort to make sure that the auto update is easy. And from your perspective, the Silverlight's always going to be backwards compatible. So my 1.0 app, and I'm going to actually show you a 1.0 app today because I have some simple animations in 1.0, it'll run in 3.0. And right now on my computer, I'm running like 3.0, somewhere between beta and release candidate, something or other, because I'm on the early adopter program. So that runtime is some weird version, a little bit after the mix version, but sometime before they are released later this year. So knowing that you can write applications and not worry about them breaking when Microsoft updates the player is nice. You don't have to say, well, what's going to happen if I build a control and I update to Silverlight 3? Well, that control is still going to work. What happens if you buy a third-party control? That control is still going to work. So in Infragistics, we build controls. Our Silverlight 2 controls run on Silverlight 3. Now, Silverlight 3 controls, will they run on Silverlight 2? No, they won't, because we're going to take advantage of platform-specific features. So if you are going to build Silverlight 3-specific functionality, and let's say you're deploying the application to a bank who has the firewall turned on and the IT staff says, I'm not going to let this auto-update, then you have to worry. So then you have to say, well, okay, either you guys have to upgrade to 3, or when you're building the app as a consultant or a consultancy company, make sure you're not using any Silverlight 3 features and you're compiling to Silverlight 2. What Visual Studio 2010 will have along with Silverlight 3 is multi-targeting. So when you build an application, you'll be able to specify that you want it in Silverlight 3 or Silverlight 2 when you actually compile it, and you'll get the right errors and whatnot. So you have some flexibility there, but just keep in mind that, you know, more and more features get added with each version. And when we talk about Silverlight 3, and there's a bunch of talks, several talks here about Silverlight 3, you'll see that there are some very cool features coming in Silverlight 3 that are worth taking a look at. So how many people have messed with Silverlight 3 beta? So yeah, there's key features. Navigation framework, probably the biggest thing. I mean, one of the issues in Silverlight 2 is how can I have a bunch of user controls and do easy navigation between them? Well, you have to kind of roll your own in Silverlight 2. Silverlight 3, it's built in. There's navigation control. It's very easy to do that. So that's one compelling reason to upgrade or to start using those features as soon as the platform comes out. So this list here just kind of goes over some of the features, but I think the key thing here is that Silverlight is unbelievable at media. High-definition video, the Olympics proved it 2 years ago, or last summer actually. Next Winter Olympics are going to be using Silverlight again to stream video. The NCAA in the U.S., the basketball championship, millions of people are viewing that. So what ends up happening is we have 20 to 30% of the computers on the internet have the Silverlight plug-in. So they say 1 in 4, and that number keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So from your perspective, you're building applications, you want all the people who are going to run your apps to have Silverlight. Microsoft is helping to do that through big events like the Olympics and, you know, things around the world where people have to install the plug-in. So building these apps, to get your minimum productivity, all you need is Notepad, the compiler, and any web server. So Silverlight's not tied to any platform. You don't need IIS. You could be running Apache. It can run in any web browser. There's no Microsoft tie-in except the when you compile it. That's the compiler from Microsoft. You don't have to say, oh, well, I need to run a Windows server. It's not necessary. You don't have to run it on a Windows machine. Run it on a Macintosh. Run it on a Linux. As a matter of fact, with Silverlight 3, they've even gone a step further, and there's a plugin for Eclipse to run on a Mac. So if you are using a Mac or you're using Linux, you can use the Eclipse plugin and do full Silverlight 3 development that way. You don't even need Visual Studio. So the idea here is, from a developer perspective of a Microsoft developer, we all use Visual Studio, most of us anyway. Expression Blend is another tool that helps you build out applications in WPF and Silverlight, does sort of the designer side of things, helps out with animations. Those tools will give you the maximum productivity to build out Silverlight applications. Expression Blend 3 is going to come with Silverlight 3. So that versioning is just moving up too. So we had Blend 1, now we're on Blend 2, and now Blend 3 will come out with Silverlight 3. So those features just keep getting better and better. All right, so let's take a look at a few examples. So the first thing I thought I would show you is a couple ideas around what line of business might look like in the future. So Microsoft has a common user interface for Microsoft Health. This started in the UK, and they're trying to do it in the US, and it might be spreading all over Europe right now. But to prototype it and to demonstrate it, they built a Silverlight user interface. Now, if you think about the business apps that you build today, they could be pretty flashy. You might use third-party controls, make them look good. But what Silverlight brings to the table is just a lot of the ability to do some interesting interactions, interesting screen changes, the way that everything flows. This is actually called a liquid layout pattern, and a liquid layout pattern means that you have a bunch of content and it fills the container like liquid throughout the bounds of whatever a container happens to be. So in this case, we have a full screen Silverlight app, 100 by 100, and as I want to view different user controls in the screen, I can actually bring them up and kind of interact with them in a full screen way. How is this different than ASP.NET? Well, the animations in Silverlight are super easy to do. So there's something called a double animation, and that means you're changing a double value. So in this case, I'm changing the double value of this user control from a height of, you know, 100 by 100 to a height of maybe 300 by 300 over duration. So once I set that duration, the duration could be 2 seconds, it just automatically creates the animation for me. So I don't have to do any hard work to make this happen. It's literally one line of XAML in a storyboard to make this work. So doing animations ends up being very easy. And then other things you'll notice here, as I click other areas of the screen to navigate, the way that the screen moves and animates gives me visual hints and visual clues as to what's going on. So there's just a lot of neat sort of things you can do with Silverlight that maybe you wouldn't necessarily be able to do with Windows Forms or ASP.NET, and the platform is what brings it to you. So if you take a look at this, if you go to Windows Live and just type in Microsoft Health Patient Journey Explorer, this will come up, and you can start checking out, you know, the various aspects of the user interface and why it's pretty cool. Another example I brought up is a CRM app that we did at Infragistics, just as a Silverlight example. And in this case, this is a Islands of Richness scenario. So we have a Silverlight plugin, and then we have some HTML linking into live maps down here on the bottom. But the idea with this application, if I go full screen, is just the subtle animations and interactions between the controls. It just makes the whole user experience a little more interesting. There's visual clues as to what's going on, and it doesn't take a lot of code to do this. Another nice thing is the templating aspect, and I'm going to show you very basic templating and styling in a sample, but here's a richer template in this list box, and essentially what's happening is I have a template, and when I select it, the template gets swapped out to show more details. And there's hyperlinks in here, and this is a custom scroll bar, so it just feels a little bit nicer. And you'll notice the animations in the chart. I'm not going back to the zero every time it changes. So through the animations frameworks in Silverlight, you can actually take something that seems static and just kind of move it. You don't have to go back and reset an animation. So there's neat things like that that make the overall user experience a little bit better. And now when we talk about line of business apps, of course, the most important thing is controls. How do I build these applications? What controls does Microsoft give me? One of the worst things for the adoption of WPF was the lack of controls. No data grid. You know, the data binding story was very unclear. How do I move my Windows Forms app up to WPF? There was all these issues with people moving over to WPF. I think we're a little bit beyond that now, but for the first couple years, maybe first 3 years, there was still issues on really the direction to go, and they want to avoid that with Silverlight. So there's all kinds of guidance and all kinds of controls coming out from Microsoft to help you build out apps. So when you decide to, when you go home tonight to start messing around with Silverlight, if you go to silverlight.net, this is where you download all the stuff to run Silverlight. Essentially what you want to do is install Silverlight tools for Visual Studio, and what that's going to do is install the project templates that'll help you build out Silverlight apps. So when you go file, new project, there's Silverlight, and create new Silverlight application, and then you have all the goodies there that will help you build out the app. The other thing is Expression Blend. I highly recommend you install Expression Blend and learn that as well. Deep Zoom, you don't really have to worry about, but it's an interesting technology. And then Silverlight Toolkit is what I want to show you now, which is over on CodePlex, and this is where Microsoft is really making an effort by shipping a bunch of different controls, not only in the box, but this is a, what they're calling CodePlex, is controls that will eventually make it in the box. So if I quickly scroll down the list, you can see we have calendars, tab controls, tree views, panels, There's some basic chart types, which when I say basic, you know, when you can say that they cover most line of business scenarios. So bar, bubble, column, line, series, and pie charts. There's controls like autocomplete box, button spinners, time pickers, accordion controls. So, you know, all of this stuff that makes a rich internet application rich is what they're shipping. So here you can see if I expand things out, you get nice animations. Transitioning content. So you can see here my up-down transitions are occurring. So you might say, wow, how do I do these transitions? They look hard. Well, they've actually created a simple control that will help you do it. And down here, if I click this, you can see this is just a simple domain up-down list box, but as I go through the lists, there are some nice animations. And what's cool is over here on the bottom, they're showing you the XAML, and some of that, there's a lot of XAML that has nothing to do with the controls, so looking at the XAML always isn't the best indicator. Then the other thing is they have a style manager, so they're shipping a bunch of different themes. So you can see here's a nice button theme that they're shipping, so it's different than the beyond the gray that you get by default. So with an implicit style manager, it means that you can create styles, Microsoft creates a bunch of styles, and you can change the style of your entire application with one line of XAML without having to go through every single control. Here's a theme browser. Let's see what we have here. I'll just quickly swap through some themes. So you can see here that these applications are changing right before your eyes. They're not recompiling. It's basically the way Silverlight works, and similar to the way WPF works, you have this concept of styles, and styles can be swapped out at runtime, and then it changes how the styles are applied to the visual tree. So since everything is in XAML, the parser actually in memory creates a hierarchical tree of all of the stuff that gets rendered on the screen. So what ends up happening is if you want to swap out the style, items in that tree get swapped out, and the colors or the styles will change. When I show you a style, you'll kind of get the idea that it's just XAML. Silverlight 3 actually makes this a lot easier with resource dictionary, so you can have external files that contain a bunch of style information, and you can apply them globally at runtime. But, I mean, if you want to do something a little bit different for branding or impress your boss, say, you know what, I was working on this last night, and, you know, I think red looks nice because it's, you know, summertime or something like that. So you can use these themes to actually sell the platform internally, which I think is probably something that many of us will end up having to do. All right, so let's go ahead and open up Visual Studio now, and I'm going to create a new project. And what I'm going to do is just walk you through very quickly how the project structure works. So when I look at Silverlight, you'll see here I have under Visual C Sharp and under Visual Basic, I have a Silverlight option in my tree. And then over to the right, I have Silverlight application and Silverlight class library. Silverlight navigation application is specific to Silverlight 3. This isn't available in Silverlight 2. I'm going to go ahead and create a Silverlight application. So the first thing it asks me is if I want to host this application in a website. So remember, Silverlight is a plugin. So essentially, this plugin needs to live inside of a web page. So even though you're never going to write any HTML, there's still a web page that hosts this plugin. When you create a new project, you have a choice of Visual Studio creating that infrastructure for you with your Silverlight site and your website, or you can just create a regular old Silverlight site, and then when you run your application, it actually will just create a test page for you. So in this case, I'm going to create the web app, and what happens here is I have a solution called Silverlight Application 1, and then I have two projects. The project up on top is my Silverlight app, which comes up first. You'll notice I have my Silverlight canvas here, and then underneath I have all of XAML. Then I have my web application, which will actually host this Silverlight project. And they created a test page for me, Silverlight Application Test Page 1. So what does this actually have in it? This will have the Silverlight control host object tag. So the idea is, just like you would add Flash to a page or Windows Media to a page, you have an object tag. Silverlight runs the same way. I'm going to have an object tag, and that's going to actually load in the player. The way this works is you have the application type, so application x Silverlight 2, and then if we look here, a parameter source is value of client bin Silverlight application 1.zap. So your Silverlight application, everything that you build, when it compiles, it creates assemblies, same exact IL that you create in Windows Forms, WPF, ASP.NET, doesn't matter. It takes that, combines it with other DLLs that are needed to run Silverlight on the client, and zips it up into something called a zap file. And then it takes that zap file and it deploys it to the website, the web application. So this is the sort of automatic thing that's happening here. You'll notice it's pointing to the client bin directory. Right now, the client bin here is empty. But if I go up here and I right-click and I build my solution, you'll notice in client bin now I have Silverlight application 1.zap. So if we went ahead and unzipped this, there would be a few assemblies in here, and they would be my application along with Silverlight specific control assemblies. So you might be saying, okay, let's say I have 10 Silverlight apps, and you just said there's Silverlight-specific assemblies. Do those get downloaded every single time? Well, what happens in Silverlight 2, they do get downloaded for every application. In Silverlight 3, you have the option of just putting a link in there to Microsoft's site, and that will download them if they're necessary. So let's say you have 10 Silverlight applications running on a client, a client in a business environment. You're doing a bunch of Silverlight, and you don't want to download it every time. You use the link option. It'll deploy it to a shared directory, and then you only download it once. So you don't take the hit, and you don't clutter up a bunch of assemblies that are essentially the same. So now that this is downloaded, what happens if I run this application, view it in the browser, my Silverlight application will show. I didn't write anything in my XAML, so nothing shows up. But you can see if I right-click, I don't get the default browser menu. I'm getting a Silverlight menu. So if I select this, there's some options about auto-update. There's some options around playback, and there's some options around application storage. So application storage in Silverlight, by default, you get, I think in Silverlight 2, it's 1 megabyte of storage, and that can go up to however high you want. What's cool about that is it's using the same ISO store that you use for Windows Forms or WPF on the client. So for example, you're writing a business application, you have a lot of data. A lot of that data is static and never changes. Why go back to the server every time to get it? I'm just going to store it locally on the client in isolated storage. And then when I fire up the Silverlight app, when the browser fires up, I check the isolated storage. I load it up locally. If it's there, if it's not there, I have the option to go to the server and get it. So the way this works is the quota by default being 1 megabyte. If you have a business app or any app, you can prompt the user to say, I need another 20 megabytes of storage. Will you let me do that? They say yes, you have the storage. They say no, it'll just never get stored in isolated storage. So in a business environment, chances are you can have hundreds of megabytes of isolated storage. In a consumer environment, it might be more confusing to the end user to just say yes to more storage. So the problem with Silverlight right now is WYSIWYG. I don't have the opportunity to drag and drop because the tools aren't quite there yet. So if I look at the controls in the box, now keep in mind, these controls in the box that I just installed are different than the controls I showed you on the Silverlight toolkit. This is the core. It's called Core CLR. These are all the core controls. Silverlight toolkit separate, download. It's more controls. So if you think up on CodePlex, we saw like 50 controls. Here there's easily 30 to 50 controls that I can build applications with. Problem is right now is, let's say I want a combo box. I can't drag a combo box onto this canvas because right now it's called a previewer window. There's no interaction. Visual Studio 2010, full WYSIWYG, just like Windows Forms. If you use expression blend, you have full WYSIWYG to design this application. Blend does that very well. So what we end up doing in Silverlight for Visual Studio is we drag things into the XAML area from here, and they'll actually add the controls to the page for us. So not the best environment, but that's where we're at today. The problem is visually trying to map out how things should look. But using expression blend, you can do that. And blend right now, you have a trial version that lasts like 180 days, so you can do as much as you want with blend. So here you'll notice I get full autocomplete. So for example, if I do a text block just shows up like this. I get the closing tag automatically, and I can put content in there. So here if I say hello world, notice up here it wants me to reload so it can view it. And now I get hello world up on top. I have all of these attributes, which are essentially properties. So XAML, Extensible Application Markup Language, XML, its foundation. So we have attributes, and all of this is basically coming from assemblies. How does it know what to load up? Well, that comes from these namespaces up top. So the namespaces are pointing to schemas or specific assemblies, and they're opening up the IntelliSense for us. So if we didn't have this, we wouldn't have the IntelliSense. So for example, you load up an Infragistics control, up on top it's going to have XML NS, XML namespace colon, IG grid control, and then it's going to point to the assembly or point to the namespace. Then when I'm typing my XAML, instead of text block, what I end up doing is I have, since I would have a new namespace, IG grid control, if I could type, and that grid control would have a grid inside of it. So that's how, when you start looking at XAML and you see things with the colon and these custom namespaces, they actually map to assemblies that have other controls in them or other capabilities in them. One of the common things is you're going to see a lot of people write controls and user controls, and they compile right into their root Silverlight app, so they have local colon something. So that local colon something is a namespace or a control within this application that they're going to use inside their XAML. So when you start reading XAML, looking at XAML, it's not always just going to be a straight control name. There's going to be something like a namespace with a colon indicating the controls that you want to use. So now that I did my text blocks, hello world, it's up there. If I run this, nothing different is going to happen because I didn't compile it yet. So I'm going to compile this again. What just happened is it created the zap file, it deployed it to my web server. So now that zap file, when I run my application, will show hello world. So if we view this in the browser, there's my hello world. So that's how Silverlight works fundamentally, is you're just constantly updating this code, and that code gets deployed down to the server after it gets compiled to IL in the form of a zap file. Now as far as interacting with this, let's say for example I have a button. My button control, and you'll notice too with Silverlight, the button basically took up the entire height and width of the area, because you have to explicitly say I want a height of 100 and I want a width equal to 50, something like that. So now I have a button control that takes up the middle of the page. This has to do with the type of layout I'm doing. I'm doing a grid layout. You can have a stack panel layout. There's other layouts in Silverlight that allow you to lay out the screen a little bit differently. But buttons, we want to click on buttons and then write code to make those buttons do something. Well, in Silverlight, the way this works in Visual Studio is all the events are in your IntelliSense. So I can say click, and then when I hit enter, the drop-down option comes up for me to add that event handler. So I can wire it up manually, or I can let Visual Studio do it. So now if I right click and I navigate to my event handler, this is basically the code behind for that XAML page, and it follows the same hierarchy. So here's my XAML, and here's the code behind for the XAML, and now I can just write code like I normally would write code for any other app. So there's no secret here. It's code behind. It's all C# or VB, plus all the dynamic languages that Microsoft supports. So when you start building out these apps, you're just like dragging controls, you're interacting, and then you have this really nice plugin experience on the client. All right, so let me show you a couple more examples. Earlier, I mentioned about styles and templates and how you can retemplate things in Silverlight. This is one of the benefits of the platform. What I have here is essentially a bunch of buttons on a page. And there's two things that you're going to learn here, how data binding works and how styles work. So Windows Forms, we have bindings. You can bind, let's say, something from a data set to the title of a window, and you do that either through the properties window or through code. With XAML and Silverlight, everything is done declaratively. So here what we have is a bunch of XAML. This ends up being a stack panel. In the stack panel, I have a bunch of buttons. So what this looks like on the page is a stack panel with a horizontal orientation with a bunch of buttons being displayed. If I look at my code behind, what I'm actually doing here is I'm creating a new instance of a type called album. Album is just a class here. Album has a bunch of properties, album name, genre, etc. So this is no different than any other class you would have. And I'm going to go ahead and pump some information, some data into this class. So here, U2, Unforgettable Fire, pop is the genre, and then a bunch of different performers. So what happens is I have this class, this object, now I want to bind it to my controls. How can I do that in Silverlight? And this is the same way in WPF. What happens is you assign the data context of a control to your object. So in this case, stack of balls dot data context equals this instance of the object. So what is stack of balls? Stack of balls actually ends up being my stack panel. So what I want to do is assign the data, bind it to the stack panel, so now all of the children of that stack panel in the hierarchy can have access to it. So if I use a binding statement on something inside stack of balls, it's automatically going to know what the binding is because it knows what that data context is. So in this case, each element here on each button, I have its content set to a custom binding, or just a binding. In Silverlight, the X part of XAML means extensible, right? And anytime you see the braces, the curly braces, that's a XAML extension. Data binding is a XAML extension. So in order to get the data out of this data context, I use a binding statement. So I assign the content of this button to binding. What do I want to bind to? Group. This button, what do I want to bind its content to? Album name. So essentially, all I'm doing is I get data, I assign it to a data context, and then I'm using binding statements on each element in there. So then when I run this guy, you're going to see that the data shows up inside of those controls. So here, U2, Unforgettable Fire, Pop, etc. And you'll notice that I have some click events, and so up on top, those click events are firing, and they're just updating a label control. So to take this one step further, how can I use a custom style to swap out the default control template that's rendering these buttons? So WPF and XAML, there's pure separation between the user interface and what actually gets the business logic, the behaviors of those controls. So what you can do is actually change through a style property the default rendering for any control. I can take a button and turn it into a square button, a round button. I can take a standard list item in a list box, change it into an image and have it scroll an image, do really rich things like that. That's really where the platform shines. So what I want to do here is each button, I want to change its style to a round button. So in the app.xaml, which is essentially the global file, anything you put in here is available to the entire application, what I've created is a new style resource. So style is a specific tag, and with a style, you are giving it a key, and that key is essentially a resource dictionary key, needs to be unique, and a target type. So I'm going to create a style called something, and I want to target this type of UI element. The type of UI element I want to target in this case is a button. So what I want to do is set some properties on this button or on this style and then bind it to my control. So in this case, what I want to do is change its control template to a grid, and inside that grid I want to have an ellipse that has a gradient brush on it. So what's going to happen here is I can apply this style and the square button is going to turn into this ellipse, and that's how all of the style stuff works in WPF and in Silverlight. So if I go back to my page, this XAML here, let's go ahead and set its style property. And again, this is a XAML extension, so I'm using the curly braces. And what I want to do is call out the static resource, and the static resource name was round button. So if you recall in app.xaml, the key here was round button. So I'm basically saying, hey, I want to change the style to a static resource called round button. So when I run this now, what actually happens is we are now changed to a round button, which has a green black linear gradient brush instead of a square button. Now, one of the things that's missing, you'll notice, is my display. So my bindings aren't working. So what happens is when I change this control template out, I had some code commented out because I wanted to make a point that when you do retemplate elements through styles, you have to make sure that you update the content presenter, because essentially every element, you know, different than Windows Forms or, you know, other platforms where we had controls and the property like text was what was displayed. Well, in Silverlight and WPF, it's a content. Everything has a content property, and content gets displayed. So we're swapping out this content presenter with whatever data that we had in there before. So what we want to do is that the content stays with whatever was already bound to that template. So now when I run this, you'll just see that the bindings occur. So here it says U2. So now I still get my click events. It just looks a little different. And I went from something that looked essentially square and made it more interesting to something that was round. So that's a basic style. And as I can go now and do this for every single one of these controls. And I just take this style. I can copy it. And I can put it right over here like so. Whoops. Copy it again. And paste it here. And now you'll see, I believe, the previewer, unless we have to update it, is going to start showing these round buttons. Now, I don't have Blend installed, but if I had Blend installed, to do these gradient brushes, it takes like 2 seconds. So one of the cool things is that us being developers, or most of us probably are developers using Visual Studio, not very gifted in color coordination and blending colors together to make something look beautiful. Well, there are tons of tutorials and examples out there of how to do this stuff in Expression Blend, and it makes it really easy for you to create styles and whatnot and change out the control templates of what you're building. So don't fear, just because you're a developer doesn't mean you can't make something look really awesome. As well, with the themes that Microsoft is shipping, you can also make stuff look really awesome as well. All right, so let me show a few more slides. I want to run through these really quick because I want to show more of the code. But here, we saw this a little bit earlier, the XAML side of things. XAML, code behind, you know, they're just instance of objects. So when I create something in XAML, text blocks is the same as saying, well, create me a new instance of this text block in code. So the idea is, whatever you're doing in XAML, you can do the same thing in code behind. People have said, well, I want to do everything in code behind. And you say, why? The beauty of WPF and Silverlight is its declarative markup. You have complete separation of that code behind in the UI. We've talked about this before, but now it's for real. So I can actually have a designer or someone else working on the UI, and I can be working on the code behind and all the other stuff, and they marry together nicely. Custom controls, I mentioned this, but this slide sort of drives it home. So if I had a control in my application and that namespace I mentioned earlier, you might see the word local. Well, it's pointing to an assembly in my project, and then when I use that control in my application or in my XAML, I'm actually using the namespace, the fully qualified namespace, to instantiate it on the page. Control templates, this is just another reaffirmation of what I just showed you. Here we have the control template. When you create these templates, you have a style object. You're setting that style object to the resource that you created. In that app.xaml file, I could have hundreds of resources, and I could pump those into whatever control I wanted based on the target type. If you start looking at some really rich themes, you know, you look at some of the samples Infragistics does and some of the stuff Microsoft is starting to do, the XAML files are like 5,000 lines long. It's because a designer is in Blend all day creating this stuff. Blend just generates all this stuff. They don't do anything manually, but what they do is they tell the developer, oh, for the grid, use this style. For the labels, use this style, and then all you're doing is setting style properties in your XAML of the UI, and then it just marries together at runtime, and it looks beautiful. So the designer does their stuff, and all you care about is, okay, what resource dictionary key should I assign the style to in my XAML, and that's how it comes out looking so nice. So when we do talk about the browser, browser interop is important. A lot of us are going to introduce Islands of Richness, Silverlight browser stuff working together. You have the ability to call from your code behind, from your C# into JavaScript functions, and you have the ability to call from JavaScript into C# functions. So basically, you tag elements as scriptable objects, and that means you can call them from JavaScript. And then in your code behind, you have this HTML object. You can go ahead and call things like, you know, window.alert and, you know, all the other stuff. I have an example I'll show you of that. So you have the ability to interact with all of the entire DOM from Silverlight. And then from the DOM, you can interact with anything inside of your Silverlight application. Here's a couple examples. One of the, you know, simple things like HTMLpage.navigate. This is common stuff that you want to do from Silverlight. You know, attaching to click events in JavaScript. These are common things that you might want to do. I'll show you this in code. All right, so let me go back into Visual Studio, And let me bring up, I showed you the control templating already. Let me bring up the browser interop example I have here, browser interaction, just to give you an idea how this works. It's super simple. So here I have a testpage.html, and I'm just going to view it in the browser, and it has a few items on it. So for example, handling exceptions, this is a Silverlight control, Silverlight button that I clicked, and remember this is happening all client-side, and what it did was it popped up an HTML or browser notice, notification. So I'll click OK, this is an exception, didn't get handled well. I'll show you this easy confirmation. Are you sure you want to hurt your users like this? I can say OK, so I get the value clicked back that I clicked OK. If I do this again, I'll click cancel, and it says you click cancel. So let's go ahead and look at how this actually worked in my code behind. So right here, if I do the alert demo, all we're doing is htmlpage.window.alert. So I'm using DOM elements, and I'm calling them directly from Silverlight. So how do I do that? If we go back up to the top, you'll notice that system.window.browser namespace was added, and that has all of the objects that I need to interact with the DOM. So this makes it real easy to do things like confirmations, dialogues, etc. One of the neat things here is this transient message. So if I go back to my page, I'll just click trigger transient message, and now this is a nice Silverlight pop-up dialog, and it pops up for a minute, and then it'll disappear eventually. So how did that actually work? Because remember, well, actually you don't remember because I didn't tell you, Silverlight doesn't have windows. There's no such thing as a pop-up window. It's basically a page object, and you have a bunch of user control objects. So in order for you to have windows pop up, you create a window framework that has, you know, sort of like you would in HTML, divs that float around, you know, or third parties like Infragistics come out with window controls. But what we did here was we just created a user control called transient message. This could be called message box, and you could just call message box.show because essentially that's what we're doing here. What this does is it has a bunch of animations and a bunch of color, but essentially it's a text block that has a message. And all I want to do is pop up this user control on demand. So how do I do that? In the code behind, what happens is we're using some animations to actually pop up the message and then to hide the message. So this animation says, pop up this message over a certain duration, leave it visible for a certain duration, and then make it disappear over a certain duration. And then I'm passing in a message, and I'm just updating my text block. And this has a show method. So how do I do that? I just make this user control visible. So I have a user control. I create an instance of it. I just make it visible, and I pass a message to it. And that's how I created this custom message box. So when you start to build line of business applications, like, okay, I need pop-up dialogues. I need to get information back and forth to my users. This is a way to do it. You create user controls, and then through animations and just visibility, you're showing and hiding those elements. It doesn't mean they're alive, you know, and running in memory all the time. You just can create an instance of it and get rid of it as you need it. So you're not hurting any, memory implications on the client by doing something like that. An interesting thing about Silverlight 3 is that it has some richer windowing functions, so you can actually do pop-up windows to a degree. There's actually a child window class, I think, and that child window class lets you pop things up. All right, so we got about 20 minutes left, I think. So the important stuff, obviously, is data access, right? You can't do a Silverlight demo without using Northwind Database, without getting customers' orders and order details, and binding it to a grid. And I think that is what we're going to do next. So there's multiple ways to work with data in Silverlight. But I think the key thing here that everyone needs to shift their way of thinking is that it's not data set, data bind, right? We lived in a world of ASP.NET and Windows forms where we did things on a server, and they actually did stuff, and they rendered down to a browser client, or they were running rich client all in memory. So it was real easy, select star from customers, the data set, datagrid1.datasource equals data set. Well, that world no longer exists with Silverlight, because Silverlight is purely a client-side technology. There is no knowledge of a server, and there's nothing connecting you to a server anywhere. So how can you create a SQL connection in your code behind? Well, you can't, because it doesn't exist, because if I am in a client plugin, I don't have permission to actually connect to a SQL server somewhere out in the cloud or wherever. So what do? You use web services and WCF to communicate with services that are sitting on a server somewhere, in a cloud somewhere. So Windows Azure, for example, supports REST-based interfaces, WCF calls. You can actually have all of your business logic and stuff running in the cloud in Azure, and then from your Silverlight app, add those services and just call them like you would any other method, get the data and pump it into grids. The idea with Silverlight is you have the entire networking stack, but everything is happening asynchronously. So when you fire off a request to a server, it's always asynchronous. There's never a blocking by default of the UI. The UI is still interactive. So you have to account for that when you do calls. So make sure that you have a completed event. The completed event actually what gets the data and binds it to your controls. So here's an HTTP request example. This is simple stuff. This is exactly the same. There's no new stuff in Silverlight than what you've already had in ASP.NET or Windows Forms or WPF. It's just this is the way you actually need to interact. So HTTP request, HTTP response, doing response stream, all that good stuff, get response. And then once you get that data, you can use link down on the client, you can use link on the server, pass data back and forth, whatever. So what I want to do now is bring up a couple examples of how this actually works. So first thing is I'm going to do a very simple WCF example. And this is, I call it very simple WCF example just because I'm not doing any database stuff. Essentially, all I'm doing is creating, adding items to a collection in my service. So here I have a web client, a web application, which is, of course, going to run on the server. And then I have my client application, which is going to run inside the browser. So what I do here is, if anyone has never done a WCF application, it's a website. You right click, you add a new item, and then in your add new item dialog, you're going to have a WCF service. Once you get that WCF service, you're actually modifying. I'll go ahead and add WCF service. What happens here is we add a WCF service, and you have a service contract, and then you have operation contracts. Those operation contracts are the attribute that allows this method to be viewable by the caller. So if I don't have operation contract on a method that I create, it's not going to be exposed through the interface to the whoever's trying to consume it. So when I'm in Visual Studio, if I create a method like get customers and I don't do operation contract, and then I go to my web client, my Silverlight client, and I do service one dot and there's no get customers, it's because operation contract's not there. So make sure that you decorate these correctly. And you'll also notice something different between this service by default and then the one that I'm going to use. There are one key difference here is in order for WCF to work with ASP.NET, AJAX extensions, and with Silverlight, you have to add this ASP.NET compatibility requirements required equals allowed to the actual class itself. So make sure this gets decorated appropriately. Make sure you have your operation contract. And then if you're actually doing like a class, there's also data contract. But in this case, I'm just adding stuff to a collection called customer, list type customer, new object, and I'm just going to return this list data. So now I just have this simple list. What do I want to do with it? I want to stick it inside of a grid here in my Silverlight app. So how do we do that? So let's go here. I'm using the data grid. And at this point, this data grid is being used from the Silverlight Control Toolkit. So the Silverlight Control Toolkit, I downloaded it. I unzipped it. And here you'll notice I have a new namespace, XMLNS data. What is it pointing to? System.windows.controls, assembly equals controls.data. So that's how that works. Now I can open that up, and I'm using it inside my app. So what I want to do is bind data that I have in my web service to this grid. Let's go to the code behind. What's happening here is I'm creating a new instance of my sample service client. What is sample service client? Well, if I right-click here, I went and I added service reference, and that add reference dialog came up. It queried all of my applications. It discovered the fact that I had a service sample service down here. It added the proxy to my client. And now I can go ahead and call any of the functions that I would normally like any other method. So I'm going to create the service, add the service to my Silverlight application. I want to create a new instance of the service, and I want to create an event handler that's going to receive my data, and then I will bind the data that I get back from those event args to my grid. And so ultimately I have this.datagrid1.itemSource equals eResult. eResult is the result of getting the data from my service. So if I view this in the browser, it is sort of anticlimactic. It's a grid with those four items in it. But those are the three or four steps you need to follow to get data from your web server down to your Silverlight application. Now, to do something a little richer, we can look at integrating with Northwind. So Northwind, the only difference would be in my service, I'm actually doing some SQL connections and going off and getting some data. So here, if we look at a data application, I'll open this guy up. Here I have a data application web. Here is my data service. I'm using Link to SQL. Now, what's cool about Link to SQL? Of course, we have this nice design time experience. I drag and drop my tables from Server Explorer. It all creates it for me, creates the proxies. And my code behind for my service, I can go ahead and do fully typed queries, so all the data types are known. So essentially, in this case, I have multiple methods. I have a get customer function. I have a get orders. What does get orders expect? Customer ID. And then I have get order details. What does it expect? It expects order ID. So I have three functions here. They're just doing quick link to SQL queries. They're going to get data lists back based on the full list of customers or the order ID or customer ID I pass in. And then they're going to get passed back through the proxy to the client. Now, the other nice thing about link to SQL is that all of that stuff is happening in the database. So it's not like munging all this stuff in server memory. It actually links to SQL smart when it does these queries. It uses the database, power of the database to do it. So here I have, I'm not going to go into the XAML because essentially what it is it's three grids. And because it's Visual Studio 2008, there's sometimes some issues with rendering the previewer. So if you run into like bad parser type and all that, don't stress out. Everything still works just fine. In Silverlight 1.0, I always used to say that if you didn't get errors, there was a problem. Because you get errors for every single thing, and if it looked there was no red squigglies in your code, then you knew something was wrong. All right, so how does this work? This is the exact same thing we did before. I'm going to right-click. I'm going to add a service reference. That service reference went down. It added the proxy for data service reference. I create a new instance of this in my loaded, and what I'm going to do here is I am going to create call service.getCustomersCompleted. GetCustomersCompleted is going to be the delegate that receives the information I'm getting back from my service that actually binds to my list. So here's GetCustomerCompleted. ListCustomers.itemSource equals eResult. So I just bound there, no problem. Down here I have ListCustomers.SelectionChange. So this is a list. This is a you have selection change in list boxes and in data grids. Every time I change that, the customer ID is going to change, right? So I want to go ahead and get new data. So I'm going to make a web service call. That WCF call is going to go back, do my link deal, go to the server, get the right orders, and then pass those back. So if we look down here, ultimately, what we're doing is we're calling get orders async, and we're passing it the customer ID. Same thing here on orders selection changed. We're creating an instance of the object to figure out what it is, but ultimately we're calling get order details async, and we're passing it order ID. So this pattern is something you can use in every single data select application you have. Who cares if it's linked to SQL? It could be whatever data access strategy you have. It could be in any tier. This could be a 10-tier application getting data from the cloud. It doesn't matter. The confusing part, 9 times out of 10, when you move to Silverlight, is the fact that I have to use WCF. So it's really just learning this pattern. And once you know that, you can do any sort of data access on the back end that you want. So now when I run this guy, view him in the browser, a We have a very exciting looking app. Select a guy. We have a grid with all the orders. And there we go. So it doesn't get better than this because I don't know what percentage. A huge percentage of our apps are read-only. We're just displaying stuff, and people need to read it. So how do we do that? We throw it in grids. And what do those grids have to do? Show columns. They have to sort. They have to filter. They have to do all that good stuff. So you have those capabilities with these grids, and the pattern I just showed you makes it real easy to bind to that way. Now, there are other strategies for data access specific for Silverlight. And what you're going to learn as you get into some of the richer capabilities of Silverlight data access is ADO.NET data services. ADO.NET data services is another technology that allows you to do really rich client-side binding through RESTful interface calls to, you know, WCF service. So that's just another way to do it. There's no one way better than the other. The jury's sort of still out on ADO.NET data services for scalability and performance, but it's an early technology. It's sort of a version one right now. So the second example here, and obviously you guys can have all this code, but because we won't have time to go into detail, but this example actually does some CRUD and does some data updates. So what's happening here is we have methods like save customer, update customer, delete customer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So how do you do that? It's easy to do it with WCF if you are doing sort of like, here's my list, and I select a guy, and then I put his stuff in a text box. Because then you go back to like the old school, you know, update this row in the database and pass it a bunch of parameters. Or you're going to pass the entire object back to your data tier and then update your object that way. But what are we missing in, what are we missing in Silverlight that we get in Windows Forms or ASP.NET through a data set is all of this change notification, the ability to know what rows have changed, what rows have been deleted, and the nice flexibility to do sort of batch updates. So this example, and this is a really cool thing, the Swiss MSDN team wrote a link to SQL client helper and a link to SQL server helper. And what this does is it sort of using just collections and creating copies of objects, it acts like a data set, and on the client, it can tell you what rows in the grid have changed. So I can change a bunch of rows in a data grid, and it makes a shallow copy of that collection, which is going to get what's changed, and then it can pass that object back. So I encourage you to look at this code when you download it, but I'll run it really fast, and it's the same exact code as the data binding code, except there's some saving and passing of objects to a save method. This one actually goes a step further. I can do a query, and this is using link to SQL again, you know, starts with, and then LO, it filtered out everyone that was in London. So here if I go over to city, it's all my London cities, and as I select them, I have this. But let's say here I want to change this to company name, you know, new company, like so, and I want to update this, so I save customers, so now this saved it, so next time I do a query, went back to the database, and it saved. So take a look at this code, because I think it's an interesting way of approaching this from a scalability perspective. If you have like thousands of rows of data in a grid, it might not be the best approach. You might want to start looking at ADO.NET data services for that, but this will work just fine for most scenarios that we work with. And also considering that a lot of what we do is read-only anyway. All right, so you saw how to query data and basically bind it to a grid, and then you know, we have the ability to update data as well. So in the last couple minutes, I have like two more slides left. These problems solved. Silverlight makes prototyping much easier. So what happens is before, the designer would create something, and they would like print it out and give it to you or send you a screenshot, and you'd have to try to duplicate it. Well, now that designers can create these styles and resource dictionaries in Blend, and you can just use the keys to assign those to controls, all of a sudden, whatever they're building is exactly like what it's going to look like on the screen. I don't have to think about it. It just works. Rich interactive graphics, I think that some of the examples I showed you in the very beginning really demonstrate that this platform is very compelling for very rich experiences. And if we look at the overall user experience, which I'm going to talk about later today, you know, you have to start treating the people that you build the internal business apps the same way you would a consumer app. Because, you know, they're people too, right? You don't want to treat them like, I'm going to do this gray because that's the default. You know, make it nice, and their experience at work is actually going to get better. And then overall, with animations and with visual clues and with some of the patterns that Silverlight introduces, this mismatch between what the computer can do and what we understand, you know, the gap gets closed on that. So I think the interactions get much, much better. So we go from this guy, right, using apps before Silverlight, to this guy, who's really cool, laid back, styling, and having a lot of fun. So, few challenges, learning curve, obviously. Hardware requirements. This isn't necessarily on the client side for Silverlight, but as you're building your apps, you need Visual Studio, you need Blend, you need all that good stuff. Visual Studio 2010 isn't here yet, but there still is support. In Visual Studio 2008, it's not the best support, but it is there. There's not as many designers as there is developers, so there's that gap in the ratio there. How many people here are actually designers? So there's three, and there's probably 100 and some people in the room. So you guys should be making a ton of money, tons of money. I would have business cards. I would have samples. I would have it all because you guys have a very exciting road ahead with Silverlight and WPF. I wish I had those skills. Some resources, Silverlight.net, Infragistics. I didn't have a Silverlight 3 programmers reference screenshot, so this is our Silverlight 1 book. So in July, please go buy this book. You'll be enlightened, and you can help, you know, me take care of my family back in the States. then obviously my email is jasonb@infragistics.com. So thanks everyone for coming. I'll take... We have a couple minutes left if there's any questions, and I'll also be up here afterwards. So if there's any questions, I can take them right now. Everyone wants lunch. Oh, there are a couple questions. Yeah, in Silverlight. So the question was, can I globally change styles? In Silverlight 3, you can do that much easier than in Silverlight 2. Okay. So it was the same question. Yep. Yes. So that's a good point. The same sort of resources are available in the WPF toolkit as well. And WPF has this whole theming and skinning infrastructure, and that's where we're moving in Silverlight 3 and beyond. And if you're really interested in Silverlight, there's a lot of good Silverlight talks this week. The Silverlight 3 talks you should go to. I don't know if you guys are allowed to go to the Mix talks, but there's also some Mix talks on Silverlight that I would highly recommend that go into like harder core things like network sockets and, you know, polling and things like that, that if you're building a real-time interactive app that you want high-speed data updates, that sort of stuff. So I would suggest you go to those as well. Yes, sir.
If you create your database and then your link classes immediately and WPF services, then, for example, if you have customers and orders and you expose your link classes also to the client and such, well, actually, you would think, I only have to get a list of customers because at the client side, I say customers.orders because it's all
part of right.
However, that doesn't work. So I found out that, if, for example, if I expose my link classes before I send them over the internet, I have to say, like, dot orders is null every time because otherwise you get some strange errors. What is the idea strategy behind it?
Yep. So what you did is a good strategy, and the other strategy is you do lose some of that flexibility in link because when a rich code behind scenario, you just get everything and it automatically does the binding for you when you're not using WCF. So with WCF, you either don't do it that way or you do it the way that you describe. So in my example, I didn't have like the customer's order details to pass that hierarchy back. All I did was do the order by order ID, by customer ID. So that's the best way I know of it today. I'm not an expert on ADO.NET data services, but there might be some workarounds or some better implementations there. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah, it's the future. Silverlight's the future, right? So SharePoint, best-selling portal, $1 billion. Microsoft sold $1 billion in SharePoint licenses in 1 year. They plan to sell another $1 billion this year. That's a lot of money, which means there's a lot of people using SharePoint, which means there's a lot of people experiencing horrible post-back hell of SharePoint web parts. So how can we get around that? Use Silverlight. So I think Silverlight has a huge future in SharePoint, and I would encourage everyone who's interested in SharePoint and Silverlight and is a consultant or doing like trying to think of a business opportunity, create cool web parts for SharePoint using Silverlight. Yeah, so there's two ways to do that. You can use something called the HTML DOM bridge, which is a pure JavaScript way of interacting, which at Infragistics, we have Silver, we're doing SharePoint controls, and that's how we're doing it today. That's Silverlight 2. And Silverlight 3, if you have, well, you still use a DOM bridge to interact from the JavaScript with the web part itself. But Silverlight 3, if I have a web part that's Silverlight over here, and I have a web part that's Silverlight over here, there's actually there's communication between web parts, so I can do an asynchronous send of a message, and I can be polling for receiver of messages in another web part or vice versa, and I can communicate with web parts that are Silverlight that way. So there's two ways to do it. Good question. Anyone else? All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a good day, and I'll see you later.